what's up? Fuck being rational, give them what they ask for. It's not enough. Few solid niggas left, but it's not enough. Few bitches that are really stacked, but it's not enough. Say you bigger than myself.
Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. Kyle is with me. Before we start celebrating, Kyle, I do want to apologize to the people we missed last week.
We did.
I had a little bit of a tragedy over here. Don't want to get into it too much because I'm over it now. As well as I can be.
You're a deeply private guy, so I didn't like broadcast everybody you weren't doing the.
It was not because we were like devastated that the Bears.
No, we were not. And honestly, what we would have said about that game is, who fucking cares now, guys? Yeah. The playoffs start, so
we would have had like maybe 20 minutes.
They did, you know.
Goddamn right. Kyle, I sent you a clip. We didn't play it. We don't play the intro before this, but I am going to play the new intro before this episode.
Absolutely.
Are you excited about that? You're the one who told me. You told me Freddie Mitchell was inappropriate given that playoff game.
This game was not a same old blues. I got to be honest with you. I did not know this entire time that the guy who sings Same Old Blues was named Freddie Mitchell. And when you first said that, I was like, what does Fred X have to do with any of this?
The guy who sings our song is thanking himself for his hands.
Yeah, I didn't know if you were making like a deep cut reference to 4th and 26, since we were talking about Packers playoff heartbreaks today. I didn't know where that came from. But yeah, no, the assuming everything worked right, and the song that everyone was listening to, nice sampling of TV Off by Kendrick Lamar there. I believe it says give them what they ask for, right, mm-hmm. Travis? What did the Green Bay Packers ask for, Travis?
They asked for the Bears.
They asked for the Chicago Bears, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
How'd that work out for them? That fucking work out for them?
31-27 Bears. We followed up maybe the best Bears win over the Packers in my lifetime with one that is somehow more of a comeback and more of a momentum swing in the favor of
Chicago.
You
know what? Everything about it's more satisfying in a lot of ways, too, because the Packers fans, Travis, mm-hmm. they've been saying for a couple weeks now, they've been saying that win doesn't count. Jordan Love, quarterback got Jordan Love. And I don't think Saturday counts either, I guess, in their book, because I don't think Jordan Love showed up in the second half of this one either now, did he? So
it's
I guess,
weird.
Yeah,
and
I guess
Matt
we
LaFleur
don't get
just mysteriously disappeared.
Yeah, I guess we just don't get
half.
To count any of these wins because Jordan Love doesn't do shit in the second half of any of them. So no, it was more satisfying than the Christmas miracle because Jordan Love was there the whole fucking time. Mm-hmm. So stick your asterisks up your asterisks and. We didn't need an onside kick because, you know, people are like, oh, that's the great thing about this game. And that's one of the great things about the way the Bears have had so many comebacks this year. And it's true. They have had comebacks. And like a lot of times there's some fluke element to that. And I get that. But at the same time, usually when you look at like I've said a lot, when you look at the box score at the end of the game, when you look at the EPA per play, when you look at the success rate, a lot of times the Bears were the better team in those games. It's just weird sequencing where they get in their own way in the first half and then they get out of their own way in the second half. And the thing about this game is that like all of the bounces went Green Bay's way.
Yeah.
The fumbles all went to Green Bay. The Bears dropped. I mean, the Cole Kmet drop that should have been a fumble that was recovered by the Bears got ruled an incomplete pass. The Bears couldn't do shit about that. The same thing then happened with Colston Loveland. In the second half, was ruled should have been a fumble, was ruled a drop. All of that went Green Bay's way. And in the second half, the Bears didn't get a turnover. They didn't get anything. All they did was blitz the shit out of Jordan Love, take advantage of his shit-ass backup tackle, make him panic. Because here's the thing about Jordan Love, and I have mostly like he's really answered a lot of questions for me this year. I've actually my estimation of Jordan Love had gone up quite a bit, but the one flaw mm-hmm. about that guy is he's still not very good under pressure. And he the minute he did not have clean pockets, he instantly became a non-factor in that game. The Bears took it from them legitimately on defense, stopped them every possession but one in the second half. And on offense, the Bears and Caleb fucking Williams generated the most explosive passing plays in one half of football in Bears history? No. In Bears in playoff history? No. in the history of the National fucking Football League. The yeah. most explosive passing plays in one half by anybody ever. Holy fucking shit, man.
The Bears. Of all
the Chicago
teams,
Bears.
The Chicago Bears.
The Chicago Bears. The team that literally introduced the NFL to forward passing and then became the first team to decide they didn't like it. The Chicago Bears did that. Holy shit, man.
Yeah, the I think I said it when we were in that first half and we were all like, this is amazing that the Bears have found a way to ruin this whole season for
that
us.
That was it was,
right
yeah.
here. You know, we were in the depths of hell and I said it. I was like, it's like every little thing that annoyed me when we won games has come home to roost in this
it was
one
every,
half of football.
Every you know? Feature of the every bad feature of the 2025 Bears was on display. In
well,
that
as you said, the turnovers that weren't bouncing our way. Christian Watson fumbles the ball into the end zone and it sits there at the feet
it doesn't,
of the
yeah.
Bear.
It
and
doesn't
the
bounce.
Packers get it.
It doesn't
Jervon
bounce outside.
Dexter, later in the game, yeah. a ball comes right to him and he kicks it out of bounds. Josh Jacobs fumbles on a kickoff return and again yeah. straight to the Packers. Like so, it's just these little things aren't going the Bears' way.
Yeah, so that's this is even better than the Christmas one because like I mean it's whatever y'all want to say. It's everything about it's fucking legit. Like they just oh, yeah. there are. And it's really funny the way people talk about it because there are 60, no matter what the Green Bay Packers think, and they really need a lesson in this year if you look at their whole season.
Yeah.
Football games are 60 minutes, and yeah. there is actually no greater prestige or honor for winning the first 30 minutes than there is for winning the second 30 minutes. And that's right. all that happened here is Green Bay got a half, we got a half, and our half was just slightly better. And that mm-hmm. and it's all legit. The Bears didn't get an onside kick. They didn't get a turnover. They didn't get any fluke. They didn't get a Hail fucking Mary. They didn't get any of that shit. They just kicked your fucking ass for the last 30 minutes of that ball game. And there wasn't a damn thing that they could do to stop him. And there was one person, especially, there wasn't a damn thing that they could do to stop Caleb Williams. And we've been here for a while now, but that was his announcement to the whole fucking world. You know, I was listening to Wayne yeah. Larrivee. I was listening to the Packers radio call because, oh, God, the schadenfreude I've been bathing in the last couple of days. Just
as
letting
have we all.
Wash.
We've all been watching the Packers fans react yeah. to this one.
Listening to Wayne Larrivee, and just there's one part in there. It's on the first play of the Bears game winning drive. It ended up being a throw. Caleb just narrowly missed Loveland on as he was rolling all the way to the right sideline. But mm-hmm. Wayne Larrivee, you could tell how their assholes were puckering the whole time he was rolling right, and you just hear Wayne Larrivee just sigh with exhaustion and go, I'll tell you one thing. With Caleb Williams at quarterback, the play is never, ever over.
Yeah.
Welcome to the other side of the mirror, Alice. That's what yeah. it's like. That's, well,
and welcome to hell, Wayne. You've been here before, actually.
And they will never, they'll never feel safe. Because, I mean, what, if the Bears are trailing by 7 in the third quarter, next year against the Packers, do you think any single Packers fan, member of the pack, any one of them's going to feel safe? 14, 16, 18 points wasn't enough to do it this time, guys. 12 points in the fourth quarter wasn't enough. 15, then 12 wasn't enough in the fourth quarter to do it. Yeah. 10 points wasn't enough last time. 16 points wasn't enough last time.
You could see it in like the Packers reactors, the Packers streamers voices. Almost it was 21-9. The Bears kick a field goal and you see the Bears people are like, God, another fucking field goal. Like, it just doesn't feel like we could do anything. Why can't we put the ball in the end zone? You look at the Packers people and they're like, oh, my God, it's happening again. Oh, my God. Like Caleb is going to get it. It's within two touchdowns.
They're doing the math and they're like 11 points. Isn't that much? That's mm-hmm. that's a touchdown, a 2-point conversion and a field goal. Yeah, yeah, the fear, and then they'll as long as number 18 in Chicago is there, that they're gonna feel that. That just
yeah.
that same feeling you felt when it was Aaron Rodgers. It was never enough. 2018 when it was it 20-3 at halftime?
Yeah,
and you just knew when you saw him walking out the tunnel to start the third quarter, you just knew it wasn't gonna be enough. That first big completed pass, you just knew it wasn't gonna be enough. That's what they've got to deal with now forever. I mean, not forever, but as long as Caleb Williams is there. And yeah, I mean, let's talk about Caleb, man.
Let's talk about some of them passes because there are so many beautiful ones to go over.
I mean, the fourth and eight to Odunze is going to be, I mean, it's the most iconic throw of his career at this point. The comparisons with the NBA Jumpman logo are awesome.
Yep.
The reaction from Christian Watson on the sideline when he was just went, bro, what?
Yeah.
Just the utter disbelief. And the funny thing is we were talking about this in the Discord a little bit ago is I don't, in the moment I was like, holy shit and everything, but like, and I felt more relief than excitement over the throw, but I don't even know that that is truly the most impressive throw that we've seen from Caleb this year.
I think his most impressive throw in this game was dropped by DJ Moore. Like,
yeah, the runner,
incredible
pass,
rolling to the right.
I'm really glad that DJ immediately redeemed himself because, oh boy, was I throwing up when he dropped that runner's ball. Oh, my
God.
That was
brutal. I roam after the game on that 4th-and-8 pass. You know, they try to ask him questions about it, and he's like, I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
I was looking at him. You know, I wasn't that concerned about it, but like, all of a sudden, it's over all these Packers. Yeah. It's right in between all these defenders.
Yeah, I don't know.
He didn't have to work for it.
Yeah, I don't know if you have ever. You're not a TikTok guy because, I mean, you're somehow even more of a Luddite than me. You don't do social media at all.
When it comes to social media, yes.
Yeah. You know, Theo Ash, really great NFL content creator, really smart guy, does a lot of really good breakdowns on TikTok and stuff, and follow him on Twitter. But he's a Packers fan. Never has been the bad kind of Packers fan, has always given Caleb his flowers. But like watching him talk about that game when he was just and talking about that throw to Odunze, and he was just like, that's what playoff football is all about. And he just goes, you could just, when he says Jordan Love, I thought played really well. I thought Jordan Love played a very good game, but he didn't make that throw. I don't think he can make that throw. I think the Chicago Bears have the best quarterback in the NFC North for the next 10 to 15 years. That's right, Theo.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you could possibly doubt it at this point. You know, Caleb has proven it over and over and over again this season on the national stage, you know, on the small stage in the Bengals game against the Eagles to close out the game, against the Steelers, and then against Green Bay twice now. And it really does feel like everybody is finally caught up, except for one random Yahoo article I saw. Like, and of course, one individual on Twitter who we're definitely not going to promote, who just seems bound and determined to prove that Caleb is terrible. But everyone else seems to be like, this guy he's got the fucking goods.
He's converted a lot of people over the last couple of weeks.
Speaking of which, more evolution from Caleb in this game. We talked about a couple weeks ago, Caleb getting vocal with some guys on the sideline.
Yeah.
Luther Burden, come on down. You that got was, a fucking earful, didn't you,
yeah,
buddy?
Yeah, that was, you know, that was, oh my God, Herbstreit and Michaels have been the worst broadcast booth in football all year long. I don't even know if that throw to Odunze raised Al Michaels' heartbeat at all, but yeah. Most Herbstreit analysis is just, this guy, he played college football,
right,
and I
exactly.
can tell you where he played college football, and he was talking about Caleb, and he was off on Caleb all night long, talking about how early in his career he was just dropping his eyes looking around, which has
never
been true of Caleb Williams at any. That's the one thing Herbstreit, who called college, should know about Caleb. He looks to throw. He scrambles to throw. He always has. He was talking about that interception by Caleb. He's like, I just don't know what Caleb was. And then he was like, I don't know what he's yelling at. I'm like, well, he's looking right at Luther Burden, and he's screaming, do your fucking job. So who could piece together this mystery, Kirk?
You could see pre-snap.
I think your fucking dog.
Luther Burden looks confused.
Literally standing there going, take the timeout, take the timeout, take the timeout. Because I could just tell Luther had no idea what he was supposed to be doing. And yeah, he's supposed to run a dig route. And it would have been open. It was a good play call. It would have been open. It was a good read by Caleb. It was a good place to throw the ball. Good chance that it's a touchdown if Luther just runs the play he's supposed to fucking run.
Yep.
And that's another thing we talked about this with Caleb. I get so annoyed that when he made the throw to DJ against Cleveland, that was so preposterous. Like, what does he have to do to earn the benefit of a doubt on when the guy who is the least intercepted quarterback in NFL history makes a throw that looks that off to begin with? He should have the benefit of the doubt at this point, where you're like, okay, the wide receiver fucked up and didn't run the right route. And then the second interception too, like it was 4th-and-1. An interception is literally the same there as an incompletion. So people harp on that are dumb. And DJ Moore fucking fell down. There was that the play was designed to go to DJ. DJ fell down, which he is wont to do. God
he sure does.
Bless him. I wish he'd get some different fucking cleats, brother. Because it's holy shit, man. Has this happened way way too damn much. But yeah, it's been for me, there's been a real change, I feel like, in the last month, because I feel like, and I mean, I think we all probably got emotional watching Caleb in the locker room talk about Ben Johnson and what Ben Johnson means to him personally, and giving that game ball back to Ben Johnson. But for me personally, I think, you know, in the last month or two, Caleb's really, him and Ben have really clicked, and Caleb is like, I'm Ben's guy. This is our team. This is my team. It's time for me to own this team, but run it the way he would want it run. And so seeing him start to, over the last couple of games, really, you see him chew out the wide receivers a little bit. You see him chew out guys when they're not in formation. You can see him get pissed. There was a play where I think Cole went into motion a little too soon, and Caleb waved him back and then sent him back into motion again at the right time, and looked very agitated doing it. And that's a sign for as much as they tried to paint it as immaturity, because, you know, as we all know, you know, when Peyton Manning's yelling at Jeff Saturday, it's fine, but some guys just aren't allowed to do that. But that to me is a sign of Caleb's maturity, his ownership of the offense, and the fact that he's comfortable in his role. He knows he's not auditioning for Ben Johnson or anything anymore. He knows this is his team. It's his team, and it's on him to get those guys going. So it was encouraging for me to see him, you know, take it to Luther. And we love Luther. It's just, you know, these things are going to happen. He's a rookie. It's a very complicated system, but that's, you know, that's the shit that you got to learn from those mistakes, you know?
Yeah.
I love Luther. I loved him introducing the choking at the Darth Vader choke as his first down celebration for that game. I enjoyed the fucking hard ass quote Luther gave, where he was like, if you all are going to run your mouth that much, you better be ready to play 60 minutes. Don't even talk next time.
I feel like with Luther, the reason that was even worse is that's the guy who Caleb has really wanted to throw to with timing this season.
Caleb trusts
DJ. DJ is the guy who he's like, a play is broken down. Let me try DJ more, because DJ is going to try to find a spot. That's what he does. But Luther is really the timing guy. And when he's that far out of place, and now you've got an interception, which honestly, the interception was fine. The Packers DB should have batted it down, but he wasn't thinking like that. Hard to get a DB not to make an interception if they can, but it did end up being like kind of a nice punt. In fact, I believe there was positive EPA on that play, was there not? like that actually turned into a good play for the Bears because the ball was intercepted. Luther's got to be on time. And if you notice the rest of the game, Caleb kind of froze Luther out. It wasn't Luther's game. It was Colston Loveland. It was DJ Moore. It was not Luther Burden. He'll take a drop. Caleb will take a drop. He won't take you going the wrong way. He doesn't do that.
Let's talk about Colston fucking Loveland, man.
We got
Because that's probably the only reason I do regret not recording after the Lions game, because he was a fucking, I mean, what did he have, 11 catches or something? It was just an insane number against the Lions.
And towards the end of that game, it's the only person Caleb was throwing to.
It's funny, I enjoyed what he said in the post game when he was like, man, those sail routes were hitting. Because you draft Luther Burden, you hire Ben Johnson, and you draft Caleb Williams, and what you envision with those three guys is just sail routes. Earlier in the year, I called it a pirate offense, because the two most popular passing plays are sail and dagger, yarg. And it kicks ass. And Luther, they couldn't stop it. They could not. And Caleb was throwing some fucking dimes on those sail routes, man. Into the hole, there was just nothing. There was nothing they could do to stop him in that second half.
Seven big time throws per PFF in one.
Apparently, they downgraded it to six today. So fuck that. Back to fuck PFF.
I wonder which one we lost.
Caleb made the boat. Lockers where I stuff the PFF graders, and I'll get an answer on that one. So
Caleb made the ship out of big time throws. He made the ship out of explosive plays in that 11, second half.
The most in history.
Just nutty.
11. I don't know if you know this, but 11 explosive pass plays for him, 200 yards passing on 11 plays, and that's one. Here's a crazy thing about when you get over 200 yards passing on just 11 completions. You don't need to complete that many fucking passes. Shut the fuck up about the completion percentage, you dumb fucks. Shut the fuck up about it. Mm-hmm. Shut the fuck up about it.
He's going to complete half of his passes right to the Super Bowl, and people will still be like, I guess he's bad because it's not he doesn't complete two or more passes a game.
And I have posted that. I have posted that graphic from that study a couple years ago so many times this year, where literally the box score stat with the absolute lowest correlation to winning is completion percentage. It means absolutely nothing in a vacuum, never has, never will. What does mean something is the most explosive passing plays in one half in the history of the National fucking Football League.
Yeah, and the thing about Caleb is he has become so good at avoiding negative plays, and he will do it by any means necessary. It's sack mm-hmm. avoidance, it's throwing the ball away.
Yeah, he didn't give a shit about
if my
the ball
receiver
away.
Is tightly covered, I will put it in a place where maybe it's going to be a really hard catch, but it's not getting picked. You know, it's throws like that over and over again. So yeah, his completion percentage ends up being a tick over 50%.
Well, when you're combined,
he's always giving his team another chance.
Well, and when you're combined with Ben Johnson, who has shown zero reluctance and in this game took a lot of heat for a fourth down decision he made, mm-hmm. which wouldn't have been a bad one if Cole Kmet had held onto the fucking ball.
Yeah.
But you combine Caleb Williams and that mentality and that ability to generate explosives with a coach who will use all four downs whenever he feels he needs them. They're just betting that, all right, I've got four plays and I'm going to take four shots at getting 40 yards. And I bet you can't stop me on all four of them. And yeah. More often than not, they're winning the bet, man.
Yep.
Like someone, Steve Letizia, a really good Bears fan on Twitter, said, it's what the NBA learned a couple years ago. It's better to shoot 40% from the three-point line than 50% from inside. So,
yeah. Hey, how about the contributions from guys who have been failing to do what they did successfully in this game? How about Kyle Manungai catching Manungai. A pass in motion and then juking
making
his
a,
ass,
making a guy
another
miss,
50
picking
yards?
Up a huge first down? Yeah, absolutely.
Holy moly. Oz out there catching the pass
yes.
that he has been dropping and going the wrong way on all season.
And maybe I imagined it, but I feel like when he caught that touch, I feel like he just, like, he fucking cradled that
yeah.
thing. Like, I bet he was like, there is no way in hell I am dropping this fucking football.
I'm wide open, man. Come
he's on. Like, this is my only shot. This can be the only playoff target I get. I refuse to go down. Like, speaking of Oz's, though, we do need to talk about Ozzy.
Yes.
That really fucking sucks. Torn patellar tendon for his guy. And that I wish I had better news on that, but that can be a career fucker there, guys.
Yeah.
Like I said in the Discord, if I had a nickel for every time the Bears had a promising rookie left tackle from Boston College who had his career disrupted by a torn patellar tendon, I'd have two nickels, which isn't a lot, but it's weird that it happened twice. That was the same thing that fucked up Mark Colombo. Now, Mark Colombo did go on to become a pretty successful NFL offensive lineman 3 years after that injury when he
yes.
was finally fully recovered for the Dallas Cowboys. So that is unfortunate. The Bears will need to find some answers at left tackle. I'll be very interested to see this week when they start doing practicing and stuff, and if they keep rolling with Theo Benedict, or if, since Braxton Jones was activated to practice last week, if maybe they go with Braxton Jones because he's your better pass protecting left tackle. I'd feel better about him potentially against Jared Verse than I would Theo Benedict. Be very interested to see how they work all that out. But yeah, that's the only real bummer about this game on that front is losing out of the trio. And then I guess I feel terrible for TJ Edwards and the injury, and that might be a career ender for TJ where he's at in his career anyways. But unfortunately, that injury, I think, sort of saved the Bears defense because DeMarco
yep.
Jackson's speed was extremely crucial to the turnaround that they made in stopping and stifling the run of the Packers in the second half there.
Yeah, good time to pivot and start talking about that defense. This defense was so putrid in the first half, Kyle, that our head coach down 14-3 in the first half on the Bears' side of the field, and not like close to midfield either.
No,
felt
like
the need
30.
To go for it on fourth yeah. down, on fourth and eight. Not on like we are talking about something that you never do as a head coach in the NFL. But he felt the desperation so keenly because our defense was stopping nothing. He was thinking, well, if this is the way it's going to be, I have to start going now. He came out of halftime. He was still livid. He was asked questions about it. He was like, yeah, well, I had to. What the hell else was I going to do, you know? Our defense can't stop anything, essentially. And, yeah, as you said, a couple things happened. I think after that play, Dennis Allen sensed danger. I think the Metal Gear Solid exclamation point went over his head. And he was like, oh, my God, am I about to get fired? And he was like, all right, first of all, Kyler Gordon's going in. I don't care if he's hurt.
Yeah.
We're going to try this.
Yeah.
And second
they
of all,
Kyler Gordon.
Thank God for him that TJ Edwards did get hurt, because DJack coming into the game
yeah.
changed everything.
Well, and they also put in Tyreek Stevenson for Nashawn
yep.
Wright. Like, that's, and I it's tough because we didn't really talk. If we had recorded last week, this is something I want to talk about, because it's not as simple as just bench Nashawn as soon as he's playing poorly again.
Yeah.
Because I think with the culture that Ben Johnson's trying to build, with the lesson they're trying to send to these guys, it's very important to show like effort will be rewarded, performance will be rewarded. We're not going to prioritize salary, and we're not going to prioritize draft position over the guys who are playing well. So when Nashawn, huge story, when he was playing well, it was a very big deal to, you know, to let him play well. And I think you had to give him a little runway to also play poorly. And it's been about 3-4 consecutive games now that his hot streak's gone down. And so with the game on, everything on the line, I think the locker room's able to understand why they go back to Tyreek in that situation. And Tyreek played pretty well. I thought he, you know, had some good moments in coverage. Absolutely. Jalen Johnson, you know, friend of the Scottcast, Robert Schmitz, made a great observation on those short routes, on those in-breaking routes, on those like hitches and stuff. Jalen Johnson still looks like Jalen Johnson. He's struggling more vertically because his speed is not, he was never a speedster to begin with, but his speed's obviously still not all the way there. So, you know, but you kind of got to ride with Jalen Johnson, let him work his way through. But yeah, and then Dennis Allen also made some schematic changes. I mean, he was like, he noticed, you know, the Packers are running a lot of play action passes, but the thing about play action passes is you can fucking blitz them, and if it ends up being an actual run, then you've got a guy in the backfield already. So Kyler Gordon was being blitzed on a lot of those play actions, and he was either a free runner or he was a guy taking down the running back in the backfield. That helped a lot. And I will say, like I said, I have a lot of respect for Jordan Love. He had worked his way up for me, but the question with Jordan Love has always been, and with Matt LaFleur, because his quarterbacks, whether it's Jordan Love or Malik Willis, are crazy efficient guys. If you are an EPA lover, like, you know, some of my dear, dear friends on Twitter, Packers Twitter loves to hang the EPA banner. But it raises a question for me, because it's like Love and Malik Willis, both of them generate so much crazy EPA per play, but they don't get a lot of plays. He doesn't like to chuck it 30, 40 times. And so that raises the question of, is LaFleur holding his quarterback back, in which case he's not as good of a coach as you might think, yep, or is his quarterback's crazy efficiency dependent on the low volume? And I think in the second half of that game, you get a little bit of an answer with Jordan Love there, in that when the run game dried up, when the play action dried up, when the protection wasn't there, he looked pretty uncomfortable. He did not look like, I mean, I'll say it, he didn't look like Caleb Williams looked like when he was under pressure. He did not look like a guy who could he didn't look like a guy who can take over a game and create like Caleb Williams can. And that's not to say I don't think Love's very, I still need, probably going to be, we'll do the quarterback ranking episode this summer is going to be real fun. I don't know if I'm going to make it to summer. We might do that before the draft this year because it's well, we've got to wait till guys get
we ready. Have to have draft picks, yeah.
Yeah, but it was, but I'm ready to do it. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. Yeah. I think Love will still probably end up in my top 10-ish in that neighborhood when we get there. But I thought that second half, I was like, I mean, I'm glad you didn't step up, but that's the kind of second half where I would want, if you were the guy that Packers fans want to say you are, I think I'd like to see you step up a little more in that situation when your run game isn't there, when you can't do your play action, when you can't be EPA man. Like, what have you got? And he didn't have a whole lot there. So that was coming. Our guy did, though. Our guy
fought. Damn right. I hate to fact check you because I did tell you there would be no fact checking. Nashawn Wright missed one play. It was that play after he got that hard fall. It was actually Jalen Johnson.
Jalen Johnson for Tyreek. Really? Stevenson. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Just his old bones. Looks like they put in Tyreek a couple of times. Definitely, it felt like when they needed a little boost. But for all the world, I can't tell why they're so uncomfortable to have him out there. He had such a great stretch in the middle of the year.
I don't know. Well, and with Tyreek, we all know there's always the possibility he did something stupid off the field that they're not happy with him about. It will be interesting to see if C.J. Gardner-Johnson is cleared from the concussion for the Rams game. It'll be interesting to see how they shake out with all, because that'll be the first time they've had all those guys available. So it'll be
what are you going to do?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do there. But I think you might actually see C.J. There might be some rotation with C.J. and Brisker, or maybe you even use Brisker as a linebacker and C.J. as a safety in a couple of different packs. It'd be interesting to see what they do for sure. I was ready to have the conversation about Dennis Allen at halftime that game. I was like, he might need to be a 1-1, and we'll see. Maybe I'll be. Well, I can't possibly be just as mad against the Rams, and we'll talk about that in a second. But he definitely for the first time in a couple weeks, I felt like he had answers in the second half of that game. He really mixed things up. So kudos
for
to Dennis Allen.
Now, I do want to point out for Eric, for our good buddy Eric.
For Eric, okay.
We started Nick McLeod, and that should be Dennis Allen's fault. Like, we should all agree to point and wag our fingers at Dennis Allen for playing Nick McLeod in the slot, because boy, did that factor in, along with TJ Edwards being on the field.
Yes.
Like, bad Dennis Allen, please play your best players immediately. Don't go into panic mode and then randomly put your best players in. This is the playoffs. Like, if Jalen is going to fall to pieces, if Kyler is going to get injured again because he's made of glass, that's just the way it is. You know, we're in the playoffs. We're against the Packers. The Houston Texans are also in the playoffs. And
yeah, CJ Stroud just threw one of the dumbest interceptions I've ever seen. Oh, my God. It looked like he had two guys open. Then he panicked for no reason in a clean pocket, then stepped up, then pulled back, then threw an interception in the red.
This game is a mess. Yeah,
CJ
this is not a good game.
CJ has not covered himself in glory in this game at all so far.
Well, I tell you what, we could talk about that in a way, because really none of our competition is looking particularly unbeatable right now.
Yeah, no, I think that's well. And then, yeah, should we? I guess I don't know. I'm not sure that what else we want to talk about with this game. We can't move on from the greatest game of our lives too quickly. What else do we want to talk about? What is there?
Montez Sweat looked like Montez Sweat in this
Montez
game.
Sweat,
Austin Booker, yeah, he flashed.
Austin Booker looked real damn. I actually used to say the Bears. I thought that second half was the most complete the Bears, and I had actually been thinking this the last couple of games. The Bears' defensive line has not struck me as the weak link the last couple of weeks. They have gotten
no, it hasn't been
some pressure. The weak link I felt against the 49ers and the Lions, and well, against the Lions, it was definitely the secondary, but against the 49ers and in this first half against the Packers, very much felt like the linebackers were really the weak point in everything.
Yes,
but the defensive line, this was the best game they played all year. Was the defense yeah. from the defense? Booker and Sweat both looked really good. Grady Jarrett looked really good. Jervon Dexter was there, but yeah.
Oh, Jervon. We're not swerving anymore, are we? Dom Rob made his presence felt in the snaps
he got. I wish Jervon well when I think he goes swerving on to maybe wherever Matt Eberflus, yeah, he's not going to be a defensive coordinator again. Wherever Jervon swerves over to a team that needs a nice one-gapping DT, but he's not a two-gapper, that's for sure. Which we knew watching his college tape, so...
Yeah. I mean, it looked like he was kind of on the way up every year. He was like making some nice strides, taking
steps
up. He's
the one guy
that took a real step
really got left behind by the change in scheme. He's just not a fit for this. So,
yeah, sorry about that, Jervon. But yeah, I mean, this game is all about the positives, man. Like, what a ride to take. We played the Packers 3 times in 5 weeks, and what a ride in each fucking game. Just right down to the wire. I think one of the things I said early in the Packers game is I'd been nervous all week because, to me, the spread of possible outcomes felt like what everybody was saying about the last presidential election, where it was like, well, Kamala's favored overall. However, if you look at the outcomes, every time Kamala wins, it's a close one. But every time Trump wins, it's a fucking ass beating.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we know what happened. And when this game started this way, I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah. every single variable is breaking the Packers' way. And this is and it's really the one way that it was just and that was, I think, why we were all feeling anxious when it was the Packers that was a matchup, too, because and the one way this season couldn't end was a loss to the Packers because it. You know, they'd spend the whole offseason saying our division title was invalid. It would ruin the good vibes of that great Christmas win. You know, that whole big emotional speech I gave in that episode would have been kind of ruined because the next time the Packers had the chance to show the Bears that they were still big brother, they went and did it in epic fashion. But they're not. They're not. The Bears have validated this everything we've been saying it all year. We've been trying to say it all year, trying to will ourselves to believe, but truly we've reached the point where everything from here is absolutely fucking gravy. And hopefully we ride the gravy train all the way to a goddamn Super Bowl parade. But truly they have reached the point where regardless of what happens from here, y'all can't tell me shit. The Bears have the coach, the Bears have the quarterback. And when our guys got the ball, you're going to be fucking terrified. End of story.
Yeah, this is kind of a particular moment in Chicago sports history too. We've felt it before with the Cubs beating the Cardinals,
yes,
2015,
that
postseason
the Blackhawks
series,
beating
and then
the Red Wings.
Right, we lost to the Mets. The Cubs lost to the Mets that next round, and you and I were both like, I don't think it fucking matters. Like, we took out the Cardinals. The emotions are gone. We'll win this thing next year. And then they did.
Yeah. Well, and the Cardinals fans against reacted. The
Red Wings, it felt like you've got to do this. You have to kill this demon.
Yeah.
They went down 3-1 and then came back and won that series.
And the Cardinals fans again. Melted down the same way that Packers fans are melting down now. Yep. Because
Be classy.
The thing about Packers fans is, yeah, they pretend for, and I've tried to say this so many times, they pretend to be the most rational, the most detached, the most above it all fan base. But that's easy to do when you perceive your superiority. Like, that's the minute you punch them in the nose, you see how desperate, how insecure, how absolutely whiny they are.
Yeah.
And they know. They know that they're like, oh, if we get everybody back healthy, if you get everybody back healthy next year, fuck it. Caleb Williams is still going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been there a million times, guys, where you feel desperately that you have the better team, the better scheme, the better coach. It doesn't fucking matter. We've got that guy. What are you going to do? What's the best defense on earth going to do to stop that throw from Caleb Williams to Roma Dunze? The pocket collapsed. He had to sprint 13 miles to his left. He was falling down. It was 4th and 8. It didn't matter. There was nothing you could fucking do. There's nothing you can fucking do.
There were incompletions in this game. The one where he's rolling right and he whips it to Colston Loveland, you know, that we talked about earlier on the sideline. That the sight downfield to see how open Colston was, and he was this close to threading that pass in there. That would have been like a 50-yard gain just on insane bullshit. He should have been sacked multiple times.
Yeah, this is something, you know, Mike Leach, great, that basically, you know, the godfather of the air raid, one of the most influential minds in football history. Mike Leach always talks about how, you know, people would always harp on, hated how much they threw the ball and how people would talk about him. I'm like, your offense needs to be balanced. And he was like, the dumbest idea in football is that a balanced offense is 50% run, 50% pass. A balanced offense in football is one that distributes all the targets to all the different areas of the field and that makes you afraid and forced to defend every part of the field equally. That's a balanced offense. And that's Caleb Williams is a balanced offense unto himself, because where on the field do you feel safe when he's got the ball? It's not the middle of the field. He's not Jalen Hurts. He's not scared of your dragons. It's not down the sidelines. It's not when you flushed him from the pocket. It's not when you've kept him in the pocket. Nowhere is safe. He might miss. It's true. He might miss. You might get to him, but you have to defend everything. There's no cheat code. He's the cheat code. So that's a balanced offense right there. And yeah, that's the vision downfield. And that's why, you know, that's part of the reason I've always been so critical of Jaden Daniels and the narrative about Jaden Daniels, because there's always this perception by people who don't watch the film and who don't even look at the numbers that, oh, he keeps his eye. He only runs when he has to. He keeps his eye. Nothing could be farther from the truth. Jaden Daniels was extremely aggravating for me to watch in college, because this man had Brian Thomas Jr. He had Malik Nabers. Every single time he broke the pocket with his legs, he created so much gravity. He'd have wide open guys downfield that he wouldn't even look at. He doesn't have the ability to perceive them, and he doesn't care, and his eyes drop immediately, and he gets scared. That's who he is. And Caleb Williams shows you why that is the ultimate trait that a quarterback can have in this day and age, especially because on that 4th and 8, what's Jared Goff going to do on that 4th and 8? But also, what's Jaden Daniels going to do? He's going to try to scramble. He's going to try to run his way for that first down. He's going to run into two defenders. There's nothing he can do. But Caleb Williams is going to make that throw to Roma Dunze. And you have to, every defensive coordinator on earth has to keep that throw in their back pocket now when they're preparing to defend the Bears.
Yeah. There are three quarterbacks in this league that make that throw. It's Patrick Mahomes, it's Josh Allen, and it's Caleb Williams. And that's it.
I think Lamar could maybe do it.
I don't think I'd. Maybe Lamar's doing that. I don't know if that's Lamar's game. Lamar might have tossed it further downfield. Lamar, you know, Lamar didn't have a great year, Kyle. I'm just going to throw that out there. It was not awesome for Lamar this year. I hope he comes back fully healthy next year, because I love that guy.
He was still 10th in adjusted net yards per attempt. I'm just throwing that out there. Is that Rudy's fault? Yes, but still.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Kyle. But we've got to talk about it. We've got to talk about fuck the Packers gate. Where are you at on our classless head coach?
Our classless
fuck the Packers.
I think I think fuck them. That's why.
Yeah, you know, fuck the Packers. That's right.
There is nothing. I have never, not one point in my life, and I'm not saying this from a position of strength, because God knows, like, I get shit talked to me all the time. I've taken it, and as long as people aren't fucking using R word slurs or calling me fat and ugly or saying something about my wife, I don't really care what you say to me when you want to dunk. Sports is about hate. Sports is fueled by hate. Yeah. And there's nothing, pretending to be above the fray is so fucking, it's sports, man. You're not above the fray. So
you're in,
yeah,
the
bring
mud
on the hate. Bring, yeah. And I love that Ben Johnson, and I said this on Twitter, Ben Johnson, I think, I'm sure LaFleur is like, what is that guy's deal? Because I don't think he ever did anything to Ben Johnson. I really don't. I think Ben Johnson is a Michael Jordan level competitive psychopath who will invent haters even when they're not. And the best thing about that, people, you know, people are like, oh, with Ben and Kayla both, where they talk their shit, you know, and it's like, oh, they're going to get their, yeah, they're going to get that. The thing is, you can't, someone who is truly an ethical shit talker, you can't actually beat them, because what's going to happen, they're going to talk their shit when they win. And when they lose and you talk your shit, that's going to fuel their desire to get their get back. They will take it. It's you can't break that feedback loop. They are nourished by your hatred. So yeah,
that's the trap card. Like, we used to make fun of Tom Brady and the Patriots for being like, ain't nobody respect us, we're the underdogs, when they're going for like their 27th Super Bowl, right? But they would grab onto that one little piece of shit talk from like Eric Mangini or Rex Ryan or something, and they'd be like, that right there, nobody respects us. And they use that for fool. Yeah, it's a whole trap card with these insane people. It's like, here, I'm going to lure you into being an asshole, which you're uncomfortable with, and once you do it, it is going to make me even more insane, and I'm going to come at you twice as hard. I will forget that I ever did anything wrong in the first place, and I'm going to Steve Spurrier your ass and run up the score when your quarterback is injured or something. But yeah, you could see that personality just seeping into the Bears too.
Yeah.
Like, all of them feel the same way. I love that that Ben's response today when asked a question about that was, I've talked to George and he feels the same way, which is the funniest way you could say that.
Which
I've
you know
spoken
that
to the owner and he agrees, fuck the Packers.
Yeah. Which is funny, because you know that George has never actually said fuck. Mother would never allow it. But you know he wants to.
Well, what is the Packers owner going to do to George? Nothing, right?
Exactly.
So say whatever you want, buddy. They're going to hate you anyway.
The Packers owner, like Caleb Williams?
That's right. That's right. Ownership of the Bears has passed to Caleb Williams. And
yeah, because didn't
now the Packers are owned by Caleb
Williams.
Is
Jordan Love going to make his Father's Day joke, happy Father's Day to all the Bears fans out there? Was that classy? I don't know. I can't keep up. What's classy these days? Was it classy when Aaron Rodgers said, my whole life I've fucking owned you guys? What's classy, you know?
I don't know. Is it going to be classy of me to point out how much better Malik Willis is than Jordan Love wherever he is next year? No, but I'm going to do it every week, regardless of who Green Bay is playing. I don't care. I'm going after him.
Incredible.
Looks like the Packers are keeping Matt LaFleur. Are you pleased that the Bears scared them enough that they almost fired him?
I wish they'd go. Well, and to be fair, they still haven't quite worked it. The wording of that Schefter tweet was kind of ambiguous. It makes me think that there's still a possibility that we may get a sequel tweet a couple days from now saying negotiations have broken down. I don't know.
Ooh.
But Matt LaFleur is a good coach. I would rather see him gone than stay. I'm sad that so far they haven't been dumb enough to actually fire the guy. So yeah, no, I, but it has been nice to just to make them melt down enough that their fan base wants it. I love that this man, every game he coaches next year, his own fan base is going to seethe with rage at him. That's never a fun position to be in.
And I mean, from the Packers' perspective, you can kind of understand it. We're looking at this from the Bears' perspective, which is, you motherfuckers, this is the best thing that's ever happened. Now you're going to be the Bears for the next 15 years, which is great. But having watched way too many Packers games this year, it's not like this only happened twice against the Bears. They did this a lot, man.
Yeah, they did this against
Matt LaFleur.
And that didn't only happen against
the
Bears. It didn't only happen against the Bears without Micah Parsons. It happened against the Browns with Micah Parsons. It happened Did it happen against the Panthers? Did they blow a big lead against the Panthers? I honestly can't remember.
The game was very low scoring overall.
Yeah.
But it was all the turtling by LaFleur. It was him not abandoning a run game that wasn't working. It was him not trying to attack them downfield when allegedly Jordan Love is so good. He's like a top eight quarterback. Let him go, Matt. It's just the same thing. He's a weenie. Weenies. They are soft.
Well, but you have to understand, Travis, if you increase the per play, you may decrease the EPA, and that's...
Of course.
That's
it's the stats.
That's an EP-nay. So.
Yeah, that's right. They're worried about
but
their
Caleb
numbers.
Had us going EP-yay, so...
Oh, my God. You should send that rhyme in to Kendrick. Maybe he'll send us back an intro.
A cease and desist?
A cease and desist. That's right. He'll be like, never do this again. Do not send me this shit. Okay. Is that enough for this game? I mean, what can we say? This is like, this is the best Bears game we've ever seen. I don't know.
I will say this, man. Like, the last time the Bears won a playoff game, I wasn't married. I didn't have any kids. I was watching that game from my parents' basement. I was a college blogger in my parents' basement watching that game. And I didn't think at that time that it'd be 15 years till they won another. And I definitely don't think right now it's going to be 15 years till they win another. Right now I'm feeling like it's going to be six fucking days or whatever till they win another, goddamn it. But just in case it doesn't, man, like our buddy Eric said in the Discord, like they can't take this one away from you ever. You will remember this one forever. So make sure you guys take this week to appreciate it. Like, don't, when you can't focus this week at work, when you're still thinking about that game, that's good. That's why you're here, man. That is why you have endured Caleb Haney and Matt Eberflus and Mike Glennon. All of this shit was so that you can spend a week like this just talking your shit and basking in it. So take your time. Enjoy it, man. They don't come along. They'll never come along enough. So this one, you know, we'll, until the day that hopefully soon someday the Bears win the last game of the year, this will absolutely be my favorite one that they've played in my lifetime. I'll always have this one, and I'm so grateful for it, man.
Damn straight. Yeah, just a wonderful fucking experience. But as you said, that was not it. That was not our Super Bowl. That was our wild card round. And we're moving on. Kyle, it's not just the Bears versus the Rams. It's the Bears versus the NFC West. And we like those odds.
Yeah, so. We're going to run the game against the whole. If we're going to do it, we're going to have to either go through. We're going to have to go through Stafford and then either Purdy or Darnold. So that'll be interesting to see. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't have a detailed matchup preview breakdown of the Rams to go because, you know, the Bears have not played these games on paper all year long, man.
Yeah.
We've got people fretting like, how are they going to stop Puka? I don't fucking know. What I do know is it's probably going to be a one score game with 4 minutes left to go. And Caleb Williams will have a shot. That's what I know. Say,
however the fuck this game goes, no matter what the score is, Caleb will have a chance with the ball with 2 minutes left. I don't know.
There is no reason to fret because I don't know. And here's the thing too. Like if they go out to the Rams, that's a Warriors death, man. That's, to quote my buddy Worf, it's a good day to die. That is the way to, if you got to go out to a team that probably on paper is still the best team left in the field in the NFC, maybe in the NFL. And, you know, the best thing about it is there's not going to be Rams fans to talk shit because I don't know that there are Rams fans at all. So good definitely point. One of the least bad teams to lose to if that happens, but I don't think that's going to happen. It's kind of funny because you're sort of like a Philadelphia sports fan. You have two settings, cocky or distraught. But I feel like when the Bears are good, you tend to be the more optimistic of the two of us. And so I think you're like, fuck it, we can take them all. I'm usually a bit more reserved, but I'm just so zen about this because I'm like, you know what? Either we win and the ride keeps going or we don't. And what a ride it's been. But, you know, there's not anybody left that I don't think the Bears could beat.
Yeah.
So fuck it. Let's ride.
I've just been saying the same thing for months. It's not that the Bears are this unbeatable team. You know, we have weaknesses.
Yeah.
It's that when I think I brought up the talk I had on this podcast about the Legion of Zoom a few weeks ago, where I was like, it's important that you understand that, yes, Byron Pringle could be good, but you need to compare Byron Pringle to the other wide receivers in his position around the NFL. Like, you can't just look at the Bears.
Every team's got a Byron Pringle.
Every team is a Byron Pringle, but they're usually your wide receiver 5, not your wide receiver 1 or 2. And that's essentially the same argument I've got here. Don't just look at the Bears, folks. Every team in this field has a critical weakness. Like, Matt Stafford's hand is screwed up. He doesn't play well in the cold. I think he has thrown almost all of his interceptions outside in under 50 degree weather. It is going to be freezing cold. It is going to snow on Saturday and Sunday. So it doesn't matter when the Bears play the game. Stafford, historically, you, me, everybody in the NFC North, we know he doesn't like the snow. He is not a snow guy. Puka, you know, obviously a very good wide receiver. Fuck that guy's personality. Right. Yeah. We can just throw him right out. But look, the reason we wanted the two seed is so we could drag these NFC West teams into the goddamn snow and ice. And that's what we're doing with the Rams.
Yeah. Absolutely. And the funny thing is, I'm going to be in Chicago. I'm going to be right next to Soldier Field, possibly as this game's going on, taking my kids to see the Spider-Man exhibit at the Museum of Science and History. I have to be honest, you know, I should have had more faith in our boys, but at the time that I was planning this back in October, I don't usually factor the third week of January into my Bears watching schedule. So with any luck, I'll hopefully be watching that game on the train on the way home from the museum. But it's going to be a great game, and I don't know why anybody on earth would count out the Bears. So
goddamn right. Yeah. Do we want to talk about, we have 10 minutes, Kyle. We could talk about Justin Herbert if you want. Would you like to talk about Justin Herbert, Kyle?
Wow. You want to end all the good vibes by talking about that? I will say that was brutal of all the playoff games he's played. And I have felt like people have been unfair to him on many occasions, but that was not a good game.
So I have been wondering for a long time, and obviously we've talked about it on this podcast, you know, and I, before we get there, I will 100% admit Jalen Hurts blew ass. And at this point he is way down the list, way further down than Justin Herbert at this point. But for as long as we've been talking about Herbie, on the podcast, I've had this question in the back of my mind, like, what would it take to get people to turn on him? Because the people who are behind him are very smart people. They're very smart football people. He's like the darling of the Nate Tices of the world, right? Justin Herbert, he has everything you want from a quarterback. His numbers are good. He looks great. He throws beautiful passes. And he has all this support from everybody. And I was like, what is it going to take for people to look at this guy and be like, oh shit, he doesn't have it. Whatever the fuck it is, he doesn't have it. And it happened all at once in this playoff game. I have never seen so many people turn on a guy at the same time as there was when he threw that ball away on 4th and 2.
Yeah, it's just he was seeing ghosts, man. And I mean, and again, it's one of those things where, like, it cannot be his fault that he got broken, but he looks broken right now. And I sort of wonder, and not to excuse him, I do sort of wonder if he is actually a little physically broken, because he's usually, like, the ball usually has a lot more zip, I feel like, than he had last night. And it's one of those things where I was like, has he just been popped so many times this year that his shoulder is fucked? Are we going to find out? If I were the Chargers, I'd make sure we find out real quickly if he's having off-season shoulder surgery. I'd be like, hey, you know, and then I'd be like, oh, that helps me. But yeah, it was not, but just what he was seeing, what he wasn't seeing in that game, not great.
Drake May didn't play that well, and he, right after the game, he was like, God, I didn't have a good game. And
if you ask Herbert Chris Collinsworth, oh my God, did he play well when he found that check down? My God, it was the most impressive check down. Now here's a guy who find his check downs, like Patrick Mahomes, you think you
dare
got
I
him.
Say
and
Mahomesian.
You think you got him? You got the safeties downfield, and then he's got that check down.
We are so starved for good announcing. Are you coming around on Daryl Johnston at this point? Are you coming my way? And you're going to be like, you know what? I'd rather have Moose than all of these fucking guys.
Oh, God,
where do you rank them? Let's rank, because honestly,
I think
I would
right
put
now,
like four or five crews under Moose. At
I
this
think
point.
Right now, I really love. I mean, anytime you get Greg Olsen, that's the best Moose. Yes. I think Tom Brady is a close second at this point. Did you catch the breakdown he gave of how you need to throw the ball differently in the wind, the way he was explaining, like, how to point the ball? Like, I was like, holy shit, this is incredibly great analysis. And then after, I think those two, it's a pretty steep
gap. Huge. Yep.
And honestly, it's hard to rank who I think is the worst because there are so many contenders. Al Michaels,
you got the Vilma team. You got the Archuleta team.
Yeah, it's bad.
Herb Street, who's just
I will just say, I think third place. I think third place for all that we hate hit, when he doesn't when he's not working an obvious agenda. I do still like Aikman and Buck as analysts. Right. That's why I was so disappointed in Troy Aikman, because I was like, man, Troy A is usually not like this, but man, he's really got an axe to grind tonight. You know, true. And I wonder if Troy Aikman was watching that Bears-Packers game and watching Caleb Williams yelling at Luther Burden on the sideline and thinking about Jaden Daniels smiling serenely after a red zone interception and being like, see, that's just not the attitude you want.
You've got to be smiling here. On the sideline.
Yeah, you got to be smiling. Yeah, you just got to be happy. Well, specifically, you got to be happy when you're getting your ass kicked and it's your fault. Like, when you throw a red zone interception, the first thing you need to do is go back to the sideline and make sure that your boys know you don't give a fuck at all that you did that. That's keen insight from Troy Aikman. Yeah. That's what a leader does. You got to go back to the sidelines and be like, it's fine. You know, whatever. That's what they want to see in those key moments.
You got to be laughing and joking. You got to, you know, text Bay on the phone, you know, which in Jaden's case is his mom. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Text you. Jay Daniels is catching stray. We're going to the divisional round of the
playoffs. Playing all the Skycast hits today. The Bears beat the Packers. Fuck the Packers.
So you know what? Drake May and Caleb Williams moved on. Jaden Daniels is sitting at home. And I fucking Bo Nix is in the division. I don't know what to say about Bo Nix. All right.
We'll just wait and see. Let's just wait and see him play a playoff game. I will say about another guy that whose fans I have antagonized by understanding reality, the Bryce Young Brigade. Truly the wildest, boldest, because you know I will say to their Commanders fan that deleted his account or preemptively blocked me after talking shit before the game was over because he knew I was going to get my get back. There was a Commanders fan who tweeted me in the second quarter. It was like, how's your franchise quarterback looking? Jaden Daniels would never. And I was like, so you deleted it before I could reply, but I guess what I was at, Caleb Williams would never, or Jaden Daniels would never what? Throw for 360 yards, make that throw to Odunze, be healthy enough to play football in January. What are we talking here that Jaden Daniels would never do? The Panthers fan came in my mention in the second quarter, was like, come outside, we saw you talking shit about Bryce Young, blah blah blah, you're getting belt to ass. And I don't know if you've ever seen cinematic classic Bring It On, but I was like, dude, you just lost. How can you be pulling Bryce Young receipts when he was 23 of 50 for 260 yards with a pick and lost?
Your shit-ass quarterback looked terrible, and Caleb Williams is in the middle of cementing that trade as the worst trade in the history of the NFL.
I have to admit, like, I really think the Bryce Young people are in, like, that's the most, I mean, even more than the Justin Fields stands. Those are the people that live in the biggest alternate reality bubble I've ever seen for now. Because I'm like, I've talked about this with the media, I think it's part of it's the way broadcast booths talk about quarterbacks really shapes people's reality of them. And that's part of why the Caleb Williams discourse is so toxic, is that you get people like Herb Street in the booth saying just completely incorrect, dumb shit about Caleb Williams. Like, he's always looking to drop his eyes to run. And none of that's true. You can factually prove it's not true, but that's
what
people
hear. Not even in college, Kirk. What the fuck?
And then as you know, people have said about, we've joked about Bryce Young, they talk about him like a make-a-wish quarterback. It's just, he's so inspiring. Look at him go out there, give everything he's got at 5'9". And it neglects the fact that, like, and I've said this too, that we're in an era where bad quarterback play doesn't look like it used to. Because back in the day, you had guys that were just truly, like, they were ethically shitty. You know, they'd be lobbing up, you'd get 20, 25 interception seasons, you'd get guys who... Like, and that was easy for the casual fan to be like, oh, this guy sucks ass. But nowadays you get these guys who, you know, like Justin Fields didn't throw a single interception for like the first 11 games of the season or something, you know. But and people are like, well, his passer rating, his completion percentage. And then you look at him like, yeah, but he's taken 50 sacks. They punt every down. Like, we have reached a golden age now where these guys, they're just so cowardly that you can't even, like, Bryce Young completes 63% of his passes and doesn't throw that many interceptions. And you don't even realize how bad he is, because also we have apparently lost the value of yards per attempt as a society. I swear, we used to care about yards per attempt. When you and I were growing up, yards per attempt was like the stat. People compared that way more than completion percentage. And now people hardly ever mention it. EPA and all that bullshit's got in the way. But, like, Bryce Young has the lowest fucking yards per attempt since the goddamn Vietnam War, folks. People don't realize that you are talking about a guy.
Motherfuckers, just throw out CPOE. They don't know what that stands for. They don't understand what goes into that statistic at all. They're just like, this is what CPE is for. It's like, you don't know what that fucking means.
Yeah.
You don't know what EPA means. You just like when the number bigger than other number. That's it. That's all you know.
My problem, too, is that part of my problem with EPA, and I don't know, obviously, I'm a guy who loves advanced analytics. I think I spend more time with football data than anybody.
You make your own advanced analytics.
But I think, we'll get it. We'll have a whole episode in the offseason. I really want to get into dishonorable yards and the Gremlin Index because I'm so happy I figured out a way to quantify those things because it's been such a thing for me the last couple of years. But no, I feel like part of the problem is the emphasis on EPA per play has lost track of the fact that we don't measure football games by the number of plays. Mm-hmm. Like, we never have.
Yeah.
And so it's like EPA per play. Okay, but how many plays did he get? And, you know, you set the minimum threshold to minimum 250 plays. Okay, but you look at the number five guys in the league have 700 plays, and then you've got some guys that have 300. And you're weighting them all the same because they hit the minimum. But there's a big fucking difference there, guys. And so you get these guys, like, spoiler alert, like Jackson Dart, where it's like, yeah, he's got a good EPA per play because they only give him 20 plays a game. And half of those plays are runs because they don't trust him. Even when they're down by three scores, they're not letting him drop back and sling the fucking football. And that's Bryce Young in a nutshell. He's not even good by EPA per play, but you can cope with his EPA per play a little easier than you can with like his adjusted net yards per attempt. Because his EPA per play will say, oh, he's only the 25th worst quarterback this year. But then you look at adjusted net yards per attempt and he's the fucking worst quarterback with 40 plus starts this century.
Right.
And then reality starts to set in a little bit. So that's why
For everybody except for Panthers fans. Yes.
Yeah. Well, cause I mean, and again, if they accept the reality of what he is, then that means accepting truly that you have made the worst trade in NFL history. And I can understand not wanting to let yourself live there, but it's where you live, guys. So,
and with that, I don't have anything else. Like,
yeah, we got to circle back one last time.
The Bears are fucking awesome.
The Bears are fucking greatest game of our lives. And you know, we'll be here next week, guys. Hopefully we're celebrating a win over the Rams. If not, we'll be toasting the most fun Bears team of my fucking lifetime. And I have no reservations about saying that. And we'll be toasting the quarterback we've waited all our lives for.
The beautiful thing, too, is that still it holds true. This is the worst this team is going to be. This is the low point of this incarnation of the Bears.
I wish I had enough faith in Ryan Poles' ability to fix the defense to actually believe that about the team, but I do believe that this is the worst we will ever see this offense be under Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams. I do think we might have some seasons in our future where Caleb has to score 35 points a game in order to make the playoffs, and you know, that kind of shit happens, and I think he'll be capable of that. But yeah, it's the God. We've never been here before, and it's a damn good place to be.
We are going to make the blogosphere and the podcastosphere so fucking toxic, Kyle. I'm so ready.
Yeah. All right, good night, guys. We love you all. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago, and people I show do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.